Welcome to Carolina's Mortgage Radio with Brandon Kohlberg, Fort Mill, Rock Hill, and TKK's number one show for mortgage and real estate. Brandon Kohlberg has been a mortgage advisor for over 14 years and is ready to assist you. Call Brandon now at 704-999-6646. Visit carolinasmortgageradio.com. And now, here is your host, Brandon Kohlberg.
Good morning. Good morning. Thanks so much for tuning in. You are listening to Carolina's Mortgage Radio. Lots to unpack today. A lot going on in the marketplace, but really got a fantastic treat for all of our listeners today in discussing, you know, leadership mindset in challenging times. We are in challenging times, and so want to give first, you know, an update in the marketplace, real estate mortgage. You may have, you know, been seeing things on social media, getting phone calls from, you know, whoever maybe had done your mortgage previously about potentially refinancing. Rates did kind of fall off a cliff about 3 weeks ago, really created an opportunity to refinance, to lower your mortgage payments. As we began this, you know, fear of coronavirus, you know, the markets really responded by decreasing rates substantially. And it really created a window there of potential refinances. And again, I'm sure you've seen that on social media. And then coronavirus fears, you know, got worse and worse. And then the markets started reacting worse. And this because of this immense refinance volume that lenders took on, what happened was that mortgage banks, mortgage companies really almost kind of started running out of money. There became serious liquidity issues in the secondary market, and rates actually spiked significantly. It went from about 3.25 up to around 4.5, which was really just unheard of. And then since, the market has just been up and down, left and right, going a little bit crazy. So a lot to unpack there. If you've got questions, give us a call. We'd love to walk you through the process. 704-999-6646. All this big swings has obviously created, you know, lots of uncertainty, lots of fear, and kind of a question of, you know, what's next. But don't worry, the market will settle down. Things will get back to normal. There will be the one good thing about the housing market is the supply is still not caught up to demand. There's still much more demand in the real estate markets than there is supply. That will keep the real estate market from any big negative swings like maybe, you know, we saw a decade ago. So really not too much to fear, guys. Hang in there, and we will get through that. And what a special time to have our guest today. He is a speaker, an author, a coach, a leadership trainer. Titus, thanks so much for joining. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for having me. This is wonderful.
Yeah,
appreciate it.
We certainly appreciate it. We've been talking, and just before the show, I kind of mentioned this. You know, we've been talking, you know, for several months about getting you on the show. You actually have your own radio show in the Charlotte market, and we've been talking about you. You do lots of leadership training. And it just so happens that we were able to get you booked for, you know, this today, Saturday, in these trying times, and kind of fortuitous how it worked out. But we're in trying times right now, challenging times, and want to talk to you about really developing a mindset for these challenging times, you know, becoming a leader or enhancing your leadership skills in these trying times. So again, you know, we're so thankful to have you. Let's maybe kind of start a baseline. You know, what is leadership, and how do we begin to implement some of these skills that we're going to talk about?
Yeah, so let me just start off by saying thanks so much for having me, right? I mean, in these times, people are making decisions that are super emotional.
Right.
People they're actually conversating less. They're engaging less. They're disconnecting. And so for you to have me connected and engaged in this capacity is a true honor and a privilege. So thank you so much. Let me say this. I think that really, to be honest, leadership happens when we're winning and we're losing. We kind of forget about leadership in the middle. So when it's a crisis, we look to leadership. And when we're winning, we go, way to go, leadership, right?
Right.
It's in the middle where we just ignore it and think that it's not relevant. But leadership is one of these core principles. I mean, it's not going to go away. It's extraordinarily important at all times. And the more that we invest into it and lean into it, I think we position ourselves to enjoy the benefits of it when we're really in need of it. And so for me, leadership has so much to do with influence, right?
Yeah.
And I'm a person of faith, so I find myself falling into God's word regularly. And there's a really cool way that I like to explain leadership. So faith is the absence of things seen, yet we still have belief. I can't take credit for that. That was written a long time ago. But what I can take credit for is putting my own little spin on influence. Here's what I think influence is. Influence is the absence of direction being given, yet people still follow. And I think there's really something powerful about that. And we kind of know that for every parent that's listening right now, when you walk in the room and you go, and you clear your throat and your kids immediately stop doing everything wrong. Like they magically know I shouldn't have been doing these things and I need to take the trash out because mom just walked in or dad just walked in. That's amazing influence, right? We didn't have to give any direction,
right?
But your sheer influence and the leadership that you've built in that person is at such a level that person knows, even though you're not telling me what to do, I'm prepared to follow. And that's really hard to gain from the market and from people, but it's the place we ought to be striving for as leaders.
And some of those, you know, some of that influence comes organically or naturally. The parent-child relationship is obviously one that jumps out at you.
Yeah.
A parent can walk into a room, like you said, just clear their throat.
That's right.
And the child instinctively knows. How do we develop that influence in different relationships, in our work life, in our relationship life?
Sure.
Because that is so key, having that influence.
Yeah, so I tell people this all the time. Folks get really frustrated. They don't want to steal someone else's idea. They want to be so unique and creative. And again, they miss that verse that says there's nothing new under the sun. Knock it off.
Right.
Now, stop trying to reinvent the wheel. So I tell folks that it's absolutely okay to not steal and copy, but how about we use the word model, right? So model what's working. Success leaves clues, right? So here's what I tell folks. If we know that parent-child relationship is probably the most fundamental position of leadership, it's probably the first time we even understand it as a human, then why not try to model it, right? So the best parent-child relationships, what are the ingredients that make that recipe so delicious and have folks keep ordering that off the menu? And for me, it's things like love, care, trust, respect, boundaries, expectations, communication. Like those are the elements that we have to bring into our marketplace when we're talking to our clients, if we want to lead them, mm-hmm. if we're talking to our staff, if we want to lead them, if we're talking to our neighbors and we want to lead them. If you're a young person and you're in school right now and you're thinking, I want to be the leader, right, in a group, there's always these natural folks that take these positions, right? And maybe the listeners are thinking, well, gosh, when I was going to school, when I was 10, 11, 12 years old, every time the teacher paired up four or five people together, I always just kind of became the leader without us voting on it. Well, that's probably because you demonstrated things from your childhood through your parent-child relationship. You probably realized that I had to set some boundaries, be clear when I speak. I probably needed to have some level of care and concern. And some people who take maybe more of a direct or some people might call aggressive approach, right? All right, guys, yeah. We're going to do it this way. You grab that and you grab this. In some case, there's still inside of that, there's still a level of love and care.
Yeah.
Just by giving direction, you're showing somebody, I care for you. Right? I mean, and the way in which we do that needs to be tempered to our audience. You can't go, Carl, grab that. Susan, grab that. You can't do that to everybody, but it does work for some people. And at the very most primal level of humanity, our mind and heart and brain associates someone giving us direction with their love. And this is why when we're not careful, relationships can be highly abusive. This is why we see so many domestic issues where people speak to one another in a way that's not appropriate, that's not helpful, and that doesn't have love. And people still stay in those relationships. They do it because psychologically and emotionally, we associate being told what to do and where to go with a very core basic element of love and appreciation. And that's why a leader has to be so mindful of their position, right? The Bible talks about it in James. Teachers, be very careful when you want to be a teacher, because the responsibility that comes with that is great. And the same is true for leaders. If you're going to hold a senior position in any relationship, I don't care if it's just you and your buddy, your drinking buddy. Right. The moment you are kind of the authority in that relationship, you got to really treat it with care, because subconsciously and emotionally, you now have a level of influence over that human being that they have given you organically, and maybe consciously they don't even realize they've given it to you. And you have to really nurture that and be careful with it.
You said a lot there, a lot to unpack, great information. So going back to, you know, kind of maybe, you know, developing that. So you said a great thing to do is model.
Yeah.
And it was about a decade ago where I was introduced to a guy named Jim Rohn. I'm sure you were. So,
oh, my gosh.
And I'm still quoting Jim Rohn on a regular, consistent basis. And I'm like, and I'm always thinking to myself, maybe I shouldn't quote Jim Rohn so much, but you know, but I learned things like, you know, inspiration doesn't start from motivation, right? It starts from education.
Yeah.
And I hammer that with whenever I'm talking about leadership or growing as an individual.
That's right.
Get into the education piece and you know, YouTube videos, social, you know, following the right people on social media. There's limitless amounts of free education out there. Books.
Absolutely.
Libraries and really digging into that to gain that influence, because for a guy like you, Titus, I know it was true for me. I was that, you know, small group of people that was just instinctively picked as the group leader.
That's right. Yeah.
You know, I was an athlete. I did well in school and you know, not to toot my own horn, but that's just the way it was.
Sure.
So for those people that aren't naturally that uninhibited, outgoing personality that maybe begat some level of leadership at a young age, you know, talk about, you know, how they can become that, you know, maybe through education or whatever it may be.
Yeah. So when I talk about modeling and I say, go back to the core elements of that parent-child relationship, that's because I know every one of your listeners have done one of those two things. You've either been a parent or you've been a child.
Right.
Right. There's no one listening right now that can say, this isn't for me. You're going to fall into one of those buckets. So at least.
And if you can, call us. We want to hear your story.
That's right. We want to hear your story. Forget about what I have to say. That's going to be breaking news. But we want to make sure that everyone listening right now understands that this is for you, right? Leadership is for you. You can participate in this. It's not something you're born with, right? This is a skill. It's a naturally developed thing. Now some people may have a talent, and I'm going to answer your question, but some people may have talent. And talent is different than skill, right? Talent is indeed, I believe, something that you are born with, right? You're just organically a couple steps ahead of the rest in this category. But when you have talent alone, you don't go on to be the top 1% in the world. When you take talent and skill and you marry those properly, then we all tune in to ESPN and watch you as the top 1% in professional sports or whatever your category is. Here's what I want to say. What can people do? I think when you understand humans and you understand what they need, then you can be a provider of their needs. And a leader is really nothing more than that. A leader is a provider of needs. And every human being on the planet really wants three things. They want to be loved, every human. Now, the way they want to be loved might be different than the way you want to be loved, okay?
Sure.
But every human on the planet wants to be loved. Every human wants to be heard. There's not a person on the planet. The most quiet, most introverted person on earth is still desperate to be heard. And then lastly, the third element, every human being wants to be understood. There's not a person on the planet that likes to be misquoted. They don't like to be misunderstood. It creates great frustration. So if you're trying to figure out, this isn't natural for me, I wasn't just organically picked. I didn't have the muscles and the athletic ability, right? Here's what you can do. You can understand your audience, right? In the same way with sales. If you don't know what your audience wants, you're not going to be able to provide what your audience want. So you're going to have to know what your audience wants so that you can go gather like a hunter the things they want and bring it to them. Right. And you know this, you cannot give what you do not have. Yeah. So first know what they need and then figure out how to possess it so that you can give it to them. You can start by loving people. And I know that sounds really weird and silly, and so many people don't prescribe to this lovey-dovey mindset stuff. And for those people, I can quote all kinds of things, right? We can quote Jim, we can say that as a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. We can say that there's tens of thousands of studies that say absolutely that love releases endorphins and oxytocin and different things into the human brain that makes a person more open-minded. We know through science that when endorphins are released in the human brain, their ability to retain information grows. How many of you guys out there are parents or leaders of a company and you're sick and tired of having to tell your kid more than once to do something? Or maybe you're tired of telling Josh or Sarah, your employee, more than one time to do something. If you can find a way to release oxytocin and endorphins inside their mind, we know this. Science says their memory and their attention goes up. Right. Now we don't have to tell them 16 times. So if you want to be a stronger leader, love people. If you want to be a stronger leader, take time to understand what they're saying to you. And if you want to be a strong leader, you've got to make sure that they feel heard. You can't just have heard them. They have to think you heard them. They have to know you heard them. So you have to make sure you say, listen, I heard what you said. Or if you're leading somebody, you have to be able to say, this is what I'm hearing you say. Am I understanding you correctly? People want to know that the person I'm following loves me, they're listening, and they understand me.
So huge points there, and so unbelievably accurate. And what do you say to, I think everyone suffers from the fundamental theorem. Fundamental theorem being that, you know, whatever I do is essentially right, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so if you were to ask somebody, hey, do you really love people? You know, do you love your coworkers? Do you love your family members? I think the default answer is yes. How do we maybe get some self-awareness?
Sure.
And look at our relationships, look at how we treat other people, and really come to a realization, are we really loving people?
Yeah.
And then what does that look like?
So this is a blanket answer for most things to increase awareness. First of all, awareness is probably the greatest hindrance that we have as a people.
100%.
Where I think that procrastination might be the common denominator to all sin, I think a lack of awareness is the common denominator to all deficiencies of success and significance by far. Here's how you fix a lack of awareness, and this is going to be really crazy. So if those of you out there are taking notes, it's really complicated. It's a very, very complex process. First thing you're going to do is ask other people questions.
And that's hard.
You know? Yeah. And it's hard because ego and pride tells you, I don't need to do that.
Right.
Right? Here's what we do in sales. When we go, how are we going to convince people to buy stuff from us? And really, leadership is a level of sales, right? I mean, I got to get buy-in from my people. Well, we ask market specialists, we go to marketing specialists, you hire coaches, which by the way, I appreciate when you hire me, but you ask me and all these other people, all these things, you know, who you muster up the courage to ask us questions, but you know who you forget to ask? The person you were supposed to be asking in the first place. Like, I should not go outside of my marriage to ask how my wife is feeling.
Right.
I should be able to look at her and go, I think that I'm loving you. I think that I'm showing you that you're loved. Can you tell me for sure? With no fear of retaliation, with no argument, with no emotional eruption, I really truly want to know. There is a huge difference between being inquisitive and questioning. When we are questioning, the person that we're talking to generally becomes highly defensive, because they can see our intent is not truly to learn, but it is to find out what they think so we can change their mind. Yeah. When we ask questions and we are actually inquisitive, the person answering is not defensive. And guess what they do? They answer honestly. We now have information and we can act accordingly. If you want to find out if you're truly loving others, ask those in which that you're hoping you love if they feel loved. and allow them to give you the next steps. Humans are really less complicated than we think. They might be slightly more complicated than the back of a Pop-Tart container, but not much more complicated. The Pop-Tart container breaks it down for you. And I want to encourage everyone out there, if you want to be loved, heard, understood, and properly led, then you have to communicate and lead up. You have to let those in positions of authority know. Stop trying to make yourself so darn complicated. On the back of a microwavable dinner, it's pretty clear. It says, step one, take the inside container out of the cardboard. Okay, got it. I'm surprised you had to tell me that, but thanks for doing it. Step two, slice a few cuts in the plastic. Step three, put it in the microwave. Step four, cook it for 2 minutes. Take it out, stir it, put it back in, cook it for 2 minutes. Let it sit. Don't burn your mouth. Enjoy the lasagna or whatever. Why aren't we that transparent with other people? If we want to be loved, heard, understood, if we want to be led properly, we just need to tell people. And if they ask us, we just need to be honest. And if we can have that level of effective communication where we ask great questions, we actually aren't questioning, but we're inquisitive. And those out there that want these things, they're actually giving good answers. Don't make it too complicated. Stop trying to sound smart and stop bloviating and over-articulating. Provide good information so that together we can come to the same place at the same time.
You're listening to Carolina's Mortgage Radio. I am your host, Brandon Kohlberg. A little bit different show today, different times we are in. We've got Titus with Collaborative Solutions Group here in studio with us, talking all things leadership.
That's right.
So Titus, you mentioned about being loved, being heard, being understood. Isn't it so much important to really begin that process by loving, by understanding, by hearing others?
Yeah. I mean, we've got to be an example, right? We've got to tell people this is the kind of culture and community that we want to create. We as leaders have to be bold enough to say, we understand that the marketplace wants this. We know that every customer wants this. We know every employee wants this. We know every vendor wants this. We've said to ourselves, this is the culture we're going to create. We're asking you to consider being a part of it. We have to ask permission. We have to say, this is the way that I want to lead. Would you like to be a part of this? And if you don't want to be a part of this, tell me why. Perhaps maybe I've got it wrong. When we approach with that level of empathy and openness, people are excited to be on that team. They can't wait. They get really patriotic about your company. They start bleeding the colors of your brand. And that's really what we want. We want people to go all in, all out, all the time. And if that's the desire of our heart, then we've got to make sure that they know our heart. So we've got to find ways to show them that we love them, that we hear them, and that we understand them. I think even in these trying times, I just read, and I don't know that this is true, but a very high-level real estate person that I'm that I trust just released yesterday, 651 homes went under contract in the last 6 days in our greater region where we are. So even though the news and the world is saying everything's over, we're done, you know, stay inside. I mean, it's really gloom and doom. The truth is the human condition bounces back and overcomes a lot of things if we lean into it, right? If we encourage it and nurture it. And so I think that when leaders realize that their human capital is far more valuable than any other level of capital they have, they start to treat it differently. Think about the things that you do as a leader. Forget about leader for a moment. Think about the things you do as a human being for the most valuable things you have. You buy these really big safes. You know, you spend all kinds of money so that you could put money in it. my wife and other women probably buy really expensive purses so they could put money in it. We buy really nice things that are really robust, and we buy these security systems that cost a lot of money so that we can protect the money we have inside of our house. At the end of the day, are we putting that kind of energy and effort into protecting our human capital the same way we want to protect our shiny rocks? We call those diamonds. Yeah. Or our colorful paper. We call that money. Are we trying to protect our human capital in the same way? Are we investing time, energy, and money to make sure that those things feel protected? You know, this is the other thing that I tell people, that if you really want to provide an ecosystem and a community and culture that makes people feel loved, understood, and heard, then you as a leader have to understand that one of your primary jobs is to make everyone feel safe and protected.
Yeah, you know, I've been in the mortgage business for almost 16 years, Titus. And so this is, you know, we're certainly in uncharted, unprecedented territory. But, you know, I went through personally the mortgage crisis.
Yeah.
And that, you know, a different source of events back then. But lots of fear being created nonetheless. And quite frankly, I was extremely exposed to the market. I was substantially over-leveraged in the market. I was also running a construction company. Mm. I had my own mortgage brokerage shop and owned actually a couple other companies during that time, all of which was in the mortgage and real estate environment industries. And you know, I lost everything. And so I share those stories quite often because I could always affect somebody. And because of that, I have gained a level of empathy for people, especially right now. You know, we could debate whether or not things should be closing, right? But the reality is that things are closing.
That's right.
Restaurants are closing. I've got I've got some friends of mine who both work at the airport. Mm. Both got handed their papers yesterday or 2 days ago now. They're a married couple. Both out of a job. So this is reality, and having some empathy for our fellow citizens and communities is a big deal. How can we translate that into leadership and action to the betterment of our communities, not just right now? Obviously we're in a time of great need right now, and this too shall pass.
Yep.
But so going forward, how do we translate that into real action? How do we put these things into action so that when hard times do come, and they will come, right? You know, this is life. Life is hard. Thankfully, we if you believe what we believe, you know how it ends.
That's right.
And things will work out. But how do we take that into action?
Yeah. So I think that personal leadership is important. Really, this just means a person who is very self-aware and takes personal responsibility for their lives and understands that things aren't happening to them, but maybe for them, and they have some level of control. If we're not in that position mentally and emotionally, we probably need to find a way to get to that space.
Not to interrupt you, man. Yeah. Yeah, but I would love it if you focused on that control. We get so lost in feeling we don't have control. Keep going, but man, I'd love for you to talk about the control piece of it.
Yeah. So for me, first of all, we have to understand the level of control that we currently have. We set goals all the time, not knowing where we are. And it's really hard to figure out where we want to go. So step one is you have to know where you are right now if you're going to have some level of control or maintain some level of clear-mindedness. You know, we see this in our military. These are people that are very highly disciplined and people that have great control over their state of being. And if we want to have that level of control, it starts with knowing where you are. Unfortunately, we live in a world where we pull our phone out of our pocket and we put in the coordinates into our GPS of where it is that we want to go. It does all the work and it tells us turn by turn what to do. And I'm actually okay with that. What I'm not okay with is we don't actually enter in the coordinates of where we currently are. The phone's mechanism, the technology tells you where you already are. You just need to tell me where you want to go. And that's not really true in real life, is it? In real life, we don't know where we are. We think we know where we are, but we haven't taken time.
Most people, I would say, have a distorted view of where they're at in life. Going back to the self-awareness piece.
Yep.
You know, my encouragement to everybody is always, dig into self-awareness. But
here's what I would say. If you looked at your calendar and you were to take a measurement, how many kid activities are on your calendar, how many personal fun things are on your calendar, how many work-related things are on your calendar, I would say now take a measurement of how many times on your calendar, not do you do, but that you put on your calendar for self-reflection, for quiet meditation of thought. Henry Ford said that thinking is the hardest work that a man will do, and that's why so few of them do it, right? And I think that we just don't, we talk through problems, Brandon, but we don't think through solutions enough. And we don't have it on our calendar. We've not blocked off the time for it. It's just not important enough to us. And if we wanted it to be more important, or I'm sorry, if we wanted it to be easier to do, we'd have to make it more important. And the truth of the matter is anything in life that we struggle with and we go, gosh, this is so hard, well, it's just simply not important enough. And people get really emotional when I say that. And they go, you have no idea how much work I'm putting into this, Titus. This is super important. And I go, I think that I'm probably the best looking guy on the planet in a sweater vest, but nevertheless, I probably need to lose a pound or two. If I made not eating donuts more important in my life, I wouldn't have that issue. It is negligent to say that it is as important as it needs to be, because if it's still hard, it's not as important. Beach balls don't get lost because they're big and colorful. Coins fall out of our pockets into couch cushions all the time because it's small and it doesn't weigh much. I promise you that no one's like, did I lose my beach ball in your couch cushions last week? No one's saying that. When you blow something up and you make it large and important, it gets done and it doesn't get lost or misplaced. Let me say this, though, about control. I think that you mentioned something that this too shall pass. You know what scares me is that this too shall pass. I listen to people in times of trial and pain talk about this too shall pass. A lot of people think that actually comes from the Bible. But it's not. You can't find it in the Bible. There's some sayings that the wisest human, King Solomon, asked his advisors to inscribe something on a ring that would give him peace and wisdom in times of trial and high decision making. And the story comes about that they said this too shall pass. I don't know exactly, but there's lots of different fables around that. Here's what I want people to understand, though. It ought to scare you to death that this will pass. And if you're thinking to yourself, wait a minute, this is the thing I say to myself to calm myself down. Shouldn't we want to get out of turbulent waters? Not before you get the stuff you're supposed to get out of it. Because there's something going on mentally, emotionally, financially, spiritually that you ought to be getting from this moment of trial. And when you go back into war again, you'll have something more next time than you had this time. But if you just keep going through stuff, trying to wait it out, then every time you go into the next battle, you don't go in better prepared. And a lack of preparation is never going to put us in a position of empowerment.
You're listening to Carolina's Mortgage Radio. Call us anytime during or after the show. I'm your host, Brandon Kohlberg, 704-999-6646. Got Titus with Collaborative Solutions Group, CEO, coach, author, speaker, radio host. Going back to my experience with the mortgage crisis, yeah. Titus, to hit on what you just said, every day during that time, you know, I went from doing very well, very successful, to being, you know, dead broke and substantially in debt. It was at this time, you know, a couple year period where, man, it felt like every day was just trying to survive. And I was just in survival mode, and I know a lot of people, you know, listeners are maybe in that same state. And what now? You know, I hate to admit it took me just a couple years to get to this point, but finally I hit my breaking point, right? And what a great moment that is when you really hit your breaking point, because then that's when the action takes place. You blow up that beach ball, and for me it was, I'm sick and tired of just surviving. Yeah. How do I get out of this? How I begin to thrive? And it was really this a self-realization that I can either, you know, continue to just kind of waddle through this and have that emotion of, man, I'm just trying to survive, to going. And it was about the time where, you know, where I was actually introduced to some, you know, some Jim Rohn, and started getting into some of his teachings. And sure. And it was really begin for me, okay, what do I need to do? And it was all about me, right? It wasn't about, and that's why I wanted to talk about the control piece, right? We have so much control in when it seems like we're completely out of control, or we have no control.
Yeah.
We still control how we react and think. You know, you talked about, you know, how man thinketh. And it was for me during this time of really self, becoming more self-aware and self-realizing that a lot of it was just my personal attitude. Yeah, things sucked, you know, and I don't ever discount people's suffering. I went through it for sure. But it was so such a different perspective when I began to think about it in different terms of, okay, I'm going to, you know, get, you know, work on this. I'm going to, you know, read this. I'm going to study this. And then the process just became gradual and to where I was really began thriving and got out of that, just feel like a surviving mode.
Yeah. Here's what I would say to that. One, I'm so glad that you got through it, right? Yeah. And I think that it's important that we realize that it's important that we realize that maybe where we are today is not necessarily our highest and best use, right? And in order to get to our highest and best use, sometimes we have to get crushed, right? A grape is, you get more money on the market for a grape after you've smashed it to pieces and bottle it than you do going to the grocery store and picking it off the vine. The problem with getting crushed or, you know, this too shall pass. Let's not learn anything. Let's just hurry up and get through it so we can go back to having fun. There's nothing wrong with getting crushed. The problem is I don't think God intended for us to go too crushed. I think he intended us to go through it. And a lot of times we take solace in a place of desperation. We stay there. We don't go through.
Right.
We start getting our mail forwarded there. That's our new home now.
It's easy to become like just engaged almost with the suffering.
Yeah. I mean, listen, most of us have over 70% of our thoughts are fairly negative, and we have about 50,000 thoughts a day. So we almost, to be quite honest, we self-sabotage far more than anyone else in the world is hurting us. And what happens is when we go to a place where we're suffering and there's pain, we feel that that's what we're worthy of. And so we actually do things to stay there. We don't get out of that. We go, oh, this is where I belong. I knew I was going to end up here. This is where I belong. And we talk ourselves into staying, when in reality, we have so much control and power over getting ourselves out. Here's how you get control. First of all, you realize where you are, and you have to start doing a self-inventory. Like, you need to really start writing down, what are the things that I have control over? And keep going until you're finished. And watch how many pages you fill up. And when you start realizing how many things do I not have control over, and you start realizing how much larger one list is than the other, I don't know how you're going to learn or he or she's going to learn. We all learn a little differently. But what I can tell you is that leadership is not taught, it's caught. People have to see it. They have to see someone doing it. Well, you need to write it down and look and see how many pages that you fill up, how much ink you put on paper. I oftentimes will tell people to draw two giant circles. One circle, these are the things that I can control. And the other circle, these are the things that really, truly matter at the highest level, right? Because not everything matters. You got to prioritize things. And when you have those two circles, if you blend them together, the part that overlaps, like the things that are both really, really critical and things you have control over, that's where you ought to focus. And when we start paying attention to the things that we need to focus on, and we pay attention to the things that we have control over, if we just live in that space, we'll be okay. I'm a very pasty white human being with bald head. I'm an Irish Italian. See, here's what that means. God made me fluorescent almost. I look like a walking light bulb, and I burn very easily. But I'm Italian, which means I'm hairy, so I get to sweat also. Thanks, Lord. So here's the deal. I don't go stand out in the middle of the sun and just go, this is where I'm at. No, I'm going to die out there. My wife knows that when we got married, I had to agree to make compromises, right? As you do in a relationship. I agreed to the 746 compromises she asked me to agree to. And she agreed to my one compromise, which is the temperature of the home has to stay at about 63 degrees at all times year round. I don't deal with heat and the sun very well. And so I understand me. You cannot grow yourself until you know yourself. I took time to know me. And then I took time to make decisions that would advance my betterment, and I lean into my strengths.
What does that process look like? To talked about a little bit of my experience. You know, you're talking about it right now. How do we begin the process of better understanding ourselves? I think, you know, we get lost in really knowing what makes us who we are as individuals. Sure. How do we begin that process?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it started in a spiritual place. You know, I grew up, my mom was a cocaine addict. My dad was a heroin addict. They got divorced when I was 6 months old. And we dealt with poverty and lack of housing and food for the betterment of the first 15 years of my life. We slept on other people's couches and in cars and where we could. And I can tell you that watching my mother cry out to God and ask him to save, who at the time was an uneducated, angry, bitter junkie, a drug addict, when she asked him to prove himself to her, quite arrogant, by the way, of her to do that. He was busy probably saving people's lives, and she had not done anything she said she was going to do, and she had been living a bad lifestyle and was shaking from not having done drugs in a couple of days, and she was about to go back to it. And when she cries out to God and says, "Save me," and then God instantly gave her what she calls clarity and never went and did drugs again, over 30 years clean and sober. For her, you didn't have to really explain anything. She just would go on saying, "Thank you, Jesus," about everything. You couldn't prove to her. If you would carry the two and show her, see how there's no God, she would go, "Let me see that piece of paper," and she'd tear it up, throw it away, and she'd go, "Nope, not my God." And so I listened to my mother just say, "Thank you, Jesus," about everything. The things I thought were not good things, she was still seeing the good in them. Mm-hmm. And so how does one do that? I think that spiritual matters matter. And when you're somebody out there that goes, "Well, I don't want to get into the Bible and talking about God," okay, then you can put lipstick on it and you can call it something different. That's fine if that makes you more comfortable. We've seen that work in other cases. Alcoholics Anonymous, they have a program, the 12 and 12. Basically, it's almost a carbon copy of the Bible. They just took the words Jesus and God out of it so that right. The world would accept it. And it's the most successful program in the history of the world relative to helping someone overcome bad behavior and habits. At the end of the day, you have to come to a place of reality that things are more good than they are bad. You have to start making lists and asking yourself the tough questions. And you can't fall into this practice of just believing that growth and awareness happens. See, when we're kids, we wake up every day, and maybe not everyone, but some of you out there, as parents, you do the little hash marks on the wall, right? Mm-hmm. And you watch the kid get taller. The kid didn't do anything to get taller or grow. It just went to sleep and then woke up taller. And that's not real life. At some point, we stop automatically growing and automatically being aware. Right. I mean, remember when a baby first becomes aware of its hand? It's like, "Whoa, you see all these fingers?" At some point, we stop automatically becoming aware and we have to put action into it, which requires discipline, focus, time blocking. You've got to make sure that it's important enough to you so that you blow it up and you don't lose it in the couch cushions. You have to understand that even though we may have been taught as young people that we go to school and they teach you and teach you and teach you and teach you and teach you, and then at the end of the week, they give you a test to measure your aptitude for learning, life is not that way when you get older. In fact, you start to actually only learn from the tests in life.
Right.
There's no education leading up to a test. It's the tests in your life, personally, financially, that actually start teaching you things. And really, self-awareness comes from a place of reflection. So many times we lean into our experience and we say, "Well, I'll never do that again." But insight is different than experience, isn't it? Insight says, "I'll just never do it that way again." And the only way that we have greater awareness is by reflecting upon the experience and gaining the insight that lives inside of it. And that's true in your personal life, your professional life, your spiritual life. You need to take time to review the thing that you went through and go searching through it like Indiana Jones to go find all the treasures so that you can pull the insight, the juice out of the orange, and allow that to help guide your way.
And I would say if you are unaware, beware. Because
yeah, that's true.
If you're unaware, what you're not aware of is that all the negative is just infiltrating your life, your thoughts,
absolutely,
emotions, feelings. Because by being unaware, you're essentially saying, "I don't care." You're probably developing some really negative habits.
That's right.
And so I would just say, be aware.
Yeah.
Be aware. You are listening to Carolina's Mortgage Radio. I'm your host, Brandon Colbert. Give us a call anytime during or after the show, 704-999-6646. Titus, man, I would love to spend maybe the next like 10 minutes as we wrap. We've talked about, the fear out there. Changing your mindset, becoming aware. I think maybe like the culmination of that is finding real happiness in life.
Mm.
I'd love to talk about the last 10 minutes or so on finding happiness. What is true happiness? How do we attain it? Is it something that we can, you know, just flip a switch in our minds and be, you know, happy? Is it that simple? What do you think happiness comes from? How can we maybe become in a fearful time such as this, when things are bad, when things are good, how do we find happiness?
Yeah, I think that serving others is always going to be the entry point into happiness. There may be other doors to it, but the largest, most welcoming, easiest to find entrance into happiness is serving other people, because you can control that. You can control whether or not you found out a need. You can control whether or not they'll accept your service. You can control whether or not you delivered on what you said, whether you asked good questions to know this will actually serve them. And so when you serve other people, you can almost control the entire process of completing what you started and allowing it to be done in an effective and efficient, measurable way, by the way. So I can't think of a better way to be happy than to serve other people. And the wonderful thing about serving others is Dr. King says that we didn't have to go to school and get a degree to do that, right? Everyone gets to serve. It's also allows everyone, in the same way we talked about earlier, where everyone can be a leader, everyone can serve, and so therefore everyone can be happy if they choose serving others as their entry point to happiness, then we can take away the excuse, well, happiness wasn't meant for me. And that's not true. You can serve others, right? And through serving people, you can be happy. I will tell you that for me, I'll just tell you the story of kind of where the itch came from for me. I remember getting a gift. It was around Christmas time, and we didn't have anything, and so I wasn't going to have anything. And we went to a church, and they were doing a kind of a gift exchange amongst just the congregation. They had served the community probably for months leading up to the holiday season. But this was kind of just a congregation-only thing. So it really wasn't about serving the community. It wasn't about letting other people not a part of the church come in and be served. It was like, hey, it was a wrap party, right? We did a great job the last 2 months. We fed so many people. We're going to just feed ourselves, love ourselves. We're going to do a gift exchange, just us. Excuse me. Close the door, invitation only. Well, we went and busted up in that party, broke in that party. I remember driving by there, being young, and my mom pulling in and saying, "We're going to get you a toy." And I was like, I could read. And I was like, I don't know that we're supposed to be here. We've never been to this church. And I know the word exchange means we need to have something to give.
Right.
And I imagine being a single parent trying desperately to provide for your child. And you drive down other people's neighborhoods to see their lights because there are no lights in your neighborhood, or you don't have anything to put lights on. And so that was kind of just the behavior and the mindset. And so we pull into this place and just hold my hand. Don't say anything. We're going to get online. We're going to get a toy. We're going to get out. Right? Like Mission Impossible. And I remember about halfway through the line, people were saying, they were like, "We don't know who these people are. We haven't seen them every Sunday." And, and then my mom, we're from New York originally, and we were here in the Carolinas. So when you're saying talking and coffee the whole time, people around here are like, "I don't know if you're from here and, we've never seen you." So I remember them asking, you know, "What did the preacher preach the last Sunday or two?" And my mom was giving them the hits. She was just dropping all the spiritual words she knew. She was like, salvation, honor, grace, you know.
Was probably spot on.
Yeah, she was spot on. They were like, "Dang it, she might have been here." I know, but they realized that we didn't belong there in their assessment. They said, "Hey, listen, we help your kind all year long. This is our one night." And my mom, kind of a pit bull. My mom's a prize fighter, by the way. She's 4 foot nothing, and she will knock you out. This woman has fists made of boulders. And so I was expecting, I was in my head thinking, oh my gosh, the curse words that are about to be said in this church, and my mom's going to probably beat up 6 people. This is not going to go good for anyone. But for the first time, I saw a beet red face, an emotional person. Her knuckles were white, gripping my hand. She was mortified. She was embarrassed. And she said, "I'm sorry, we'll leave." And about halfway out to leaving, one of the pastors, and I don't know if it was the lead pastor, but one of the pastors kind of saw the commotion and came over and said, "What's going on? Whoa, 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 what's going on?" And they tried to explain to him, Pastor, you know, they didn't bring a gift. They're not a part of the church. That's just not the purpose for this event. Of course, at that moment, the pastor kind of rebuked them and said, wait a minute, there's never a time where we don't serve people. Do you see what they're wearing? Okay, how about we give them some clothes, give them some food, provide for them and serve them? And he said, he looked at my mother and said, can I give him a toy? And my mom said, yes, sir. And he bent down on one knee and he said, son, come here, I want to give you a toy. Now, when he said that, I had realized about three steps into walking towards him that I had never heard the bass, baritone, masculine, manly voice call me son, because I had not met my father. And it felt so warm and comforting to hear a man call me son for a young boy who had never heard that. And he said, I want to give you this gift, and I want to serve you, and I want to give to you, and I want you to have fun and enjoy it. You don't have to share it with anybody. You don't need to get saved. You don't have to come to church next Sunday. I just want to give it to you. Would you accept it? And I remember thinking, what a bozo. Like, this is not a good deal. Like, this guy needs to understand the art of negotiation. You basically just said, I get everything I want. There's nothing in it for you. What I didn't realize was everything was in it for him. And he said to me, listen, when you take this toy, you're going to play with it. You're going to have fun, right? But I pray that the moment you receive it, for the rest of your life, it will be an itch you can't scratch to give and desire to serve other people. Mm. And that was the day it kind of started for me. And I wish I would have known that. I wish I would have read the contract a little bit better, because years have gone by and I just can't scratch that itch of wanting to serve and give. And it makes me so happy every time I serve others. What I didn't realize at the time that I absolutely realize now is that he had so much value in that deal. He got to give freely. He got to change the perspective and mind of another human's life. And here's the reality, without being arrogant or prideful, I've impacted tens of thousands of people. We started a charity, a 501c3, many years ago. We feed the homeless. We help serve people. I have spiritually, mentally, financially, economically, professionally served tens of thousands of people. And it's probably only because some guy gave me a toy that I can't even remember what it is anymore. And so when you serve somebody, the ripple, the domino effect, the butterfly effect of that is so fulfilling. And I don't know if that answers the question, but that's my attempt at least.
Absolutely. How old were you when that happened?
I was about 9 years old.
Nine
years old.
You know, I think, you know, if we all just took that story that you just told, what would have happened if that pastor didn't step up?
Yeah.
If those people said, you're not welcome, and he didn't step up and you walked out. You think about the contrast of what actually happened, mm-hmm. and where you are in life now and how many people you've affected for the positive, versus what if that one person would not have stepped up. The ripple effect of that, what would have come? I mean, it's certainly interesting to think about, and I think everyone should think about that contrasting story. You know,
sure.
By doing one act of kindness, literally could impact tens of thousands of lives.
Yeah. Yeah.
And to take advantage of that opportunity, you know, are you searching out those opportunities? Are you taking advantage of the opportunities when they present themselves? I think that is really the essence of leadership.
Yeah.
To culminate.
Yeah, I think that in that moment, that individual demonstrated leadership.
100%.
And I can tell you this, he rebuked people. He didn't give them direction.
Yeah.
He said, that's wrong. And then he served. And the moment he did that, everyone fell in line. Remember the influence, the definition is that I've come up with is the absence of direction being given, yet people still follow. Every one of those people followed his actions. And I think that if I were to encourage people to really look at anything, I would tell them to be someone who is one of action. People follow what you do far more than what you say. And he simply served, and they followed suit. And because he decided to be a servant first, he was then empowered to be a servant leader. And he didn't serve so that he could lead. He served because he wanted to serve.
Right.
And maybe he'd had some experience in life and he realized that I'm planting a seed right now in a garden. And if it's watered and loved, if that seed is listened to, and if that seed is understood, and if that seed is properly loved, it might grow into a tree that's going to be bigger than the problems this person will ever face. And if they muster the self-awareness and they have the mindset and the strength to climb up that tree, they will not live in their desperation, but they will climb up out of it. I'd like to think he thought that way. I can tell you this. There's not a day that goes by that I don't think that way about every person I meet, every opportunity that's presented to me, and every opportunity that isn't presented because I have to go mine for it and seek it and search it. There's not a human that I ever meet that I don't think to myself, if I can water this seed, this human, with love, understanding, and make sure they feel heard, then perhaps something will grow that no one expected, and no one has to stay where they are. They get to move to where they belong.
Like any good writer, you tied it up well there. We started with talking about, you know, being loved, being heard, being understood, and you recapped it with those same thoughts. So a little bit different show today. We hope you found tremendous value in it. I certainly did. Titus, amazing information. Thanks so much for being here, brother.
Great honor to be here. Thank you.
And thanks for listening. We will catch you guys again next Saturday. Tune in. Call us anytime after the show with questions. 704-999-6646. Have a great week.
You've been listening to Carolina's Mortgage Radio with Brandon Kohlberg, Fort Mill, Rock Hill, Antigua K's number one show for mortgage and real estate. Call Brandon at 704-999-6646 or visit Brandon Kohlberg online at carolinasmortgageradio.com. Join Carolina's Mortgage Radio again next Saturday morning beginning at 9 a.m. right here on WRHI FM 100.1.